So today our goal is to understand quantum Hall effect. So this is the plot that we saw day before yesterday. It shows many plateaus in the Hall resistance. And when you are at those plateaus, the longitudinal resistance Rxx vanishes. So this is what we would like to understand. We solved for the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian for 2-deg, two-dimensional electron gas in the presence of magnetic field in Landau gauge. It's a simple trick, write down the Hamiltonian in terms of simple harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian. Then we added another term due to an electric field, EEx. So this corresponds to an electric field in minus x direction. And you can solve this Hamiltonian. You can find the eigenvalues. They are now given by this expression, and the wave functions by this expression, where omega c is the cyclotron frequency. It's Eb over m. And x naught is called the guiding center coordinate. So what has happened due to this electric field is, A, the degeneracy is lifted. All these states used to have were highly degenerate because of the values of k that the wave functions can take. And the wave functions are now centered, or the Gaussian in this wave function is now centered at x naught, which also depends on k. So a simple trick, we can see the direction of electric field here is the force that the electron sees is negative derivative of this. So that's E. So the force that electron sees is E times E, charge of electron being negative. That means the electric field is in minus x direction. So let's draw this vector. So the electric field is in minus x direction. The magnetic field is up, is in z direction. Now, the Hamiltonian commutes with Py. So momentum in y is a good quantum number. We found the eigenvalues, they depend on this momentum. So we can calculate the velocity in y direction. And the velocity in y direction is 1 over h bar del E nk over del k. We can calculate this velocity. It's 1 over h bar E. So with just contribution from this term. So this L is magnetic length, is square root h bar over E times B. So this velocity comes out to be E divided by B. So what we have found is, so we solve the Schrödinger equation for electron in the presence of magnetic field and electric field. And what we find is that the velocity, so the electrons drift now, but the direction of drift is in y direction, is not. So the drift is, the direction of drift is E cross B. It's not in the direction of electric field. You can understand this in the following way. Imagine that you have E equal to zero. If you have no electric field, then the electrons, they will move in closed trajectories, in circles. Now you have finite electric field. As a result, electrons are still going to move in circles, or these cyclotron trajectories are now going to drift. So the trajectories look like this. Any questions so far? So next, what we are going to do is we are going to generalize this. And the way we will do this is we'll replace the electric field in this formulation by negative gradient of V. So the electric field in this Hamiltonian is now not just a uniform electric field in minus x direction. It is replaced by the gradient of some potential. And this potential in general depends on x and y. So we take the local value of this gradient, and that is the electric field. So this can be done, and we can do exactly the same thing. This is allowed, or you can conclude that this solving this Hamiltonian will produce results or agreeable results, provided that the change, the potential V changes on length scales much larger than the magnetic length. So the changes in the potential V are smooth over the magnetic length. So the idea is that you still have cyclotron trajectories. What this potential is going to do is, depending on the local value of electric field, these cyclotron trajectories are going to drift in a direction given by E cross B. Any questions? So the direction of drift now will be given by minus the gradient of V cross B. So the magnetic field is in Z direction, so let's just write this as now, what does this really tell us? That the drift has to be perpendicular to Z. So the electrons will drift in the XY plane. But the drift also has to be perpendicular to the gradient of V. What this implies is that electrons are going to move along the equipotential contours. So think of it in the following way. If this is a contour where you have the potential is constant. So this is a line where V, the potential, is constant. So this is equipotential contour. So if the electron tries to go in this direction, we know that the potential changes. In this direction, the potential changes. In this direction, the potential changes. By definition, because this is the equipotential contour, that implies if the potential changes in this direction, the velocity has to be perpendicular to it. Similarly, here also, the velocity has to be perpendicular to the changes. So you'll find that the velocity is always along this contour. So at each point, you'll find that the velocity has to be tangential to the gradient of V. That implies that the electrons are going to move on equipotential contour. Any questions about this? So what this really means is that this is now the drift of cyclotron orbits. So if I try to draw the trajectories that these electrons follow, it's going to look something like this. So there is cyclotron motion, but the electrons now see a drift, and they move along the lines of where the potential is constant. So now what we are going to do is we are going to imagine that this two-dimensional system has impurities. And that is what we wanted to do in the beginning. So we started with perfectly clean sample, and now we add impurities in the system. No sample in the lab is going to be perfectly clean. Impurities are bound to be there. And these impurities are going to produce a potential that the electrons will see. So if I imagine now a two-deck, let's say this is my two-dimensional electron gas. And now imagine that there are impurities. Say, for example, one of the ions is replaced by another ion. It has higher charge, some has lower charge. You can have positive charge impurities, negative charge impurities, and so on. Now, what I'm trying to draw here is the potential due to these impurities. So say I have a negatively charged impurity here. What I'm drawing now is the equipotential contour. So if I have a positively charged, so the density need not be uniform. You will have these contours. So there are impurities in the 2-deck. This is X, Y. The impurities give rise to a potential that depends on X and Y. What I have drawn here is equipotential contours for these potentials. So if I have a charge impurity sitting right here, you can imagine that the electrons would see Coulomb interaction. So if it is negatively charged, what that means is electrons will be repelled. So this will produce an electric field. Electrons would move away, but the electric field is, you can draw the equipotential contour. It will be a closed line around this charge. What we have just concluded is that if this variation is smooth over the length scale, over the magnetic length scale, then we'll still have cyclotron trajectories, but these trajectories are now going to drift. So if you have negative, say you have a negative charge here, so the electric field lines are going in. So if I calculate the direction of drift, E cross B, I will see that the drift is counterclockwise. So what that means is electrons will perform this motion. Similarly, when along this, you would see that the electrons would move like this. What does this analysis tell us? This tells us that most of the electronic states are localized. Why do I say that? That simply means that electrons are going to move along this equipotential contour. And because it's a closed contour, these electrons are only going to stay in this region. They cannot go from one end of the sample to the other end of the sample. Now, in general, you will have many impurities, and all of these impurities will give rise to many equipotential contours, and you can see that most of the electrons are going to get trapped. Trapped in the sense that they are going to get localized because of this drift. It does not matter whether you have positive or negative impurities. They're going to get trapped either way. It's only that in one case, they will be moving clockwise, and then in the other case, they'll be moving counterclockwise. It's also possible to have a trajectory or that this potential is such that you have an equipotential contour that looks like, say, this, which does go from one end to another end. Keep in mind that we are assuming this impurity potential or potential due to disorder is random. So it's also possible that you have an equipotential contour that looks like this. In that case, you will have an extended state. So the electrons can move along this trajectory. So we'll have two types of states as a result of impurity potential. If we have clean 2-deck, we have Landau levels. Each of the Landau level is highly degenerate. If we add impurities, what we are going to get is many localized states and some extended states. So these states that go from one end of the sample to the other end are extended states. Any questions so far? So what we have concluded here is, if I plot, let me save this space, if I plot density of states for the case no impurity potential, then I will have Landau levels, and each of these Landau levels are highly degenerate. So I have Landau levels, so my energy is simply going to be this, h bar omega c n plus half. Note that this term comes only if you have a potential. If you do not have a potential, just this term, you only have harmonic oscillator energy levels. So I have a Landau level at half h bar omega c, and then at 3/2, at 5/2, and so on. So what I'm drawing is density of states. So each Landau level is highly degenerate, so the density of state is quite high at these values. So all of these are equally spaced. What happens to this when you add impurity potential is the following. Now, the energy can have some constant value of shift when you complete the square and so on. I'm going to ignore any constant shift of the energy. Now, if we have the impurity potential, many of these states, so these are highly degenerate states, they are going to get localized. Depending on whether the potential is attractive or repulsive, the energy of these states is going to be higher or lower than these values. So if this state, its energy, it will get localized depending on whether it was positive, attractive or repulsive potential. It will either be below or up. So what you're left with is what is called broadened Landau levels. So let me draw the states. Let me use red. So the idea is that now we have two types of states in the bulk. Some are extended states, like these ones, but most are going to be localized states. So one way we can draw this is, let's say in the center, we have some extended states. What that means is that these states did not see the potential at all. They're not going to get localized due to the impurity potential. And now these states, they are all localized. So these states are localized, and then we have some extended states. Any questions so far? So all these states, this is the spectrum. The energy value is lower or higher. How they look in the real space is that they are localized. Now, let's look at what is called the confinement potential. What do we mean by that? If this is the two deg, say in x direction, it's very long. In y direction, the width, it is narrow. Now, you would like what you want is to confine electrons in this region. One way you can do that is by providing a confinement potential. So I'm drawing confinement potential. Let's say this is the value. Okay, let me just draw it. So this is confinement potential, and you would like to confine the system along y direction. So what this does is, let's say this is top edge, and this is bottom edge. And the confinement. So what happens is, now this is similar to particle in a box. You have potential very high at the boundaries, so the wave functions vanish. Wave functions must stay inside this potential, inside this well. Now this potential is along y. The purpose of this potential is to confine the system in y. So this potential is independent of x coordinate. So if I will draw equipotential contour for this potential, at the edges, it's going to keep going in x direction. So the equipotential contour for the confinement potential is going to be like this here and this here. So think of these two lines as some equipotential contour due to confinement potential. Is that clear? Now, let's look at the direction of electric field. So at the top edge, so the derivative of this confinement potential in y, the derivative is negative. So the electric field is positive. Electric field is in positive y direction. So where will be the direction of drift? It will be E cross B. That means the electrons are going to move in to the left on top edge. So the electric field direction is different on two edges, right? So the derivative is negative here, positive here. So you can conclude that at bottom edge, the electrons must move in the opposite direction. This gives rise to a notion of chirality. If you are on the top edge of the system, electrons must move to the right. There are only right movers on top edge, and there are only left movers on the bottom edge. So what we have shown is that on top of localized and extended states, there are something called edge states. And these edge states are chiral. You can also imagine a state in bulk that is goes like this, which has cyclotron motion in the opposite direction. So the extended states in the bulk need not be chiral, but the edge states must be chiral. Yes. That means that all the trajectories on top edge coming from equipotential contour on of this potential must be moving left. Yeah, so that means typically you have helical system where you have particles that can move both left and right. In this case, chirality means that you eliminate that the system can only move in one direction. But it also comes in pair in the sense that it can move only in one direction, but on one edge. There is a partner, there is a no-go theorem by Niels and Ninomaya that says that you must have this in pairs. Now imagine, another way to understand this is imagine that your system was circle. Then you will have confinement potential all around. In that case, the equipotential contour for this confinement potential is going to go all around the sample. So you will have edge states that will be moving all around. So you can think of these edge states as something that goes all around the system. Any questions? So the main idea here, so these states, localized and extended, I've drawn here. These localized and there are, so what we are discussing now are edge states. So on top of these states, there are other states which we are going to call edge states. Now these edge states are basically on the sample, they are always going to be there. And there is a topological, there is a way to understand them using topology. Now, topology, by topology, I mean topology of the Hilbert space for the wave functions of the bulk states. So what that means is if you do, so this, so far what we did, we talked about these wave functions. What you can do is you can describe each Landau level by such a wave function and calculate a topological number called TKNN invariant. You'll discuss this more when you discuss Berry curvature in your second course. And if this number comes out to be zero, then we will say that this is topologically trivial. If this number comes out to be one, two, or then, so this is also called as Chern number for the state of the system. Now, depending on which Landau level is occupied, the Chern number is equal to that Landau level. So for the first Landau level, the Chern number is 1, second it's 2, third it's 3. So if the first Landau level is occupied, here you will have, in this window, you will have one edge state. Here you will have two edge states. And then you will have three edge states and so on. So we can understand what these edge states are in a semi-classical picture by drawing these trajectories. Remember in the first week we discussed in a fully quantum picture, you can't think of trajectories. So if you do a full quantum calculation, you can calculate, you can phrase this problem into calculating properties of the wave functions. And by calculating these properties, you will conclude that in this energy window, there must be only one edge state. The system can only support one edge state. In this, the system must have two edge states and so on. Any questions so far? What we are already convinced of is that these edge states must be chiral. They must move in one direction on one edge. What that means is that if an electron is moving in this direction, There is no state. All the states, all electrons here must move to the left. That means this electron cannot be scattered back. That means if this electron is carrying current, it is going to do its job. It's going to finish its job. There is absolutely no way it can be backscattered or it can be lost. So if the electron has to go from this end to this end, it will carry its current. It's not possible for this electron to be lost. What that means is each edge state is going to contribute one quantum of conductance. So a quantum of conductance is, so we saw here one quantum of resistance. The fundamental unit was E squared over H. So for conductance, it's H over E squared. So each edge state carries a current of, so write down here, each edge state carries a current or conductance, carries a conductance of E squared over H. The reason I'm talking about conductance is because if you have, say, two states, both of them will carry E squared over H. So the total conductance is going to be 2 E squared H. And that means the resistance will be inverse of that, H over 2 E squared. So it implies that you have two parallel channels. So it's as if you're adding the resistance in parallel. Any questions so far? Another analogy you can use to understand just the bulk landscape is typically you will find these discussions that you can think of this in the form of real landscape with mountains and start filling this landscape with water. So when you fill this with water, you will have small lakes in the landscape. Now, think of the shorelines as the trajectories. So if you're only allowed to walk on the shorelines, you cannot go from one end of the landscape to the other end. So if you have very low filling of water, you have small lakes, you will just be localized. So when you start filling up the Landau levels, when you is equivalent to pouring water in this landscape, the first few states you would see are going to be localized. Consider very high filling. If you have a lot of water in the system, then only the highest mountains are going to be out of this water, and that will change the topology. Now you have islands. Again, if you're only allowed to walk on the shoreline, you cannot go from one end to the other end. You're still localized. So at very high filling also, you are localized. Only at some intermediate value of filling of water, you have shorelines that are endless, that go from one end to the other end. And this is the filling here that you have these extended states. So now we have all the pieces on the board that we need to understand that plot. Any questions so far? So let's now discuss this plot. So we want to understand why we have a plateau in the resistance and in the conductance. Classically, we would have expected a straight line, right? One way to understand this is, so this is a plot as a function of magnetic field. So you are changing magnetic field. Now, when you are changing magnetic field, the degeneracy of each Landau level let's look at this picture. The degeneracy of each Landau level is decreasing. So the degeneracy is given by B by phi naught. So the degeneracy, what did we call? So degeneracy is given by B over phi naught. This is how many states there are in each Landau level. So if you're decreasing magnetic field, like in that case, then you're decreasing the degeneracy of each Landau level, and you're also decreasing the separation between these Landau levels. So if you have fixed number of electrons, you need to occupy fixed number of states. So you have n electrons, Pauli exclusion principle tells you that you must occupy n states, and let's discuss this at t equal to zero. So the lowest n states are going to be filled. As you decrease magnetic field, you are decreasing the degeneracy here and decreasing the separation. That means more Landau levels will be filled. So as you decrease the magnetic field, what you're doing is you're increasing the, so your electron, so if you look at this picture now, if you're decreasing the magnetic field, you are decreasing the degeneracy here. Say you had 100 electrons or these many number of electrons so that the first Landau level was filled. Now you decrease the magnetic field, the degeneracy here is lower, and also the separation is lower. So now this will move down, and what you will be left with is two occupied Landau levels. So decreasing magnetic field is same as changing the Fermi level of the spectrum. Any questions so far? So we are changing magnetic field. Effectively, we are changing the degeneracy and the level separation. This is equivalent to changing the chemical potential. What that means is we are going to understand this plot where we are changing magnetic field by adding electrons to this plot, which will be same as changing filling fraction. So when we add electrons, some states are going to get occupied, and depending on where your chemical potential is, your transport properties like conductance depend on what states there are at the chemical potential. Now, if your chemical potential, when you are slowly filling up the system, say you are in this region, the chemical potential is in this region. All of these states are localized. These states cannot contribute to transport. This is what gives rise to the plateaus. So you are changing the Fermi level, but the conductance is not changing at all, because all the states that you are occupying, these are localized. They cannot contribute to transport. So when your chemical potential is in these localized regions, you will get a plateau. So this is rather strange. We want clean sample to see 2-deg, but to clean two-dimensional electron gas to see quantum Hall effect, but it cannot be too clean. You will not have plateaus if it's perfectly clean. So what the reason you have plateaus is because of these localized states. So we now understand the plateaus. Now you should ask the question, okay, there are plateaus, but why precisely at those values? That is because of edge states. So if you are in this region, these states are not contributing, but for all energy values, you will have edge states. There is precisely one edge state in this region, and this one state is going to contribute a conductance of E square over H. So in this region, for when you have this plateau, the value of conductance at that plateau is E square over H. So the value of resistance is H over E square. And that explains the first plateau. Now, when you are here, you will have another plateau. Now you have two edge states. The value of conductance is at these two channels is 2e squared over h. So the value, the plateau of resistance should be e squared over 2h. That explains. So this was, this is nu equal to 1, nu equal to 2, nu equal to 3, and so on. Any questions? Now, next thing we have to do is to understand. So far, we are talking about these regions, right? What about these red extended states? When your chemical potential is there, these states can also contribute to the transport. And they do. And what these states, the contribution does, is it gives rise to vanishing Rxx. So Rxx is the longitudinal resistance. So it's a measure of current. So the current is in this direction. It's a measure of resistance along x. When you have these extended states contribute, the longitudinal current can flow effortlessly. So the resistance goes to zero for Rxx. So these extended states, they give rise to vanishing Rxx. So you'll see that when you are in the center of the plateau, so you can now think of this like localized, localized, localized. Every time you see an extended state, you will get a dip or your longitudinal resistance will vanish. Any questions? So the key point here is Hall resistance is carried by edge states. Longitudinal resistance is carried by extended states. And the plateaus are there because of localized states. So we need all of these states to explain those plots. And then when we include, so this is still non-interacting electrons in magnetic field, in impurity potential. When we include electron-electron interactions, what we are going to do is we are going to map strongly interacting electronic problem or a strongly interacting problem for electrons to non-interacting problem for composite fermions with fractional charges. And then we can use the same understanding. Then we'll have fully filled levels to explain the plateaus at fractional values. Any questions? So next, what we are going to do is we are going to, so far we have discussed quantum Hall effect for electrons which have parabolic dispersion. So the Hamiltonian we started with was p squared over 2m. Then we add a vector potential to it, then add some electric field, some confinement potential, and we get this picture. Next, what we would like to do is we'll like to study quantum Hall effect for relativistic electrons. So the example we are going to take is the problem you did in the first week on graphene. So the electronic spectrum for graphene is given by Dirac Hamiltonian. So now what we are going to do is discuss Landau levels or spectrum for graphene. Any questions about this? So there are many pieces that we have to put together to understand that plot, and it took quite some time, and many people contributed in this. And it was very surprising, because here, so to observe this, you needed very clean samples and very high magnetic fields. And also what you needed was extremely low temperatures. So the temperatures needed to see those plots, those quantized plateaus, those experimental data, was around few Kelvin. Now what we will see, what we found for graphene, is that you can see quantum Hall effect in graphene at room temperature. Yes?
The stuff we've just done there, is that the integer quantum Hall effect?
Or? Yes. Okay. So this is semi-classical analysis of trajectories, and we already discussed that this should not be done in quantum case. You cannot label electrons with by trajectories. So we are developing an understanding of these localized and extended states on semi-classical analysis, and we'll use correspondence principle to conclude that the spectrum looks like this. You can do a full quantum calculation, and this is what you find.
But this is just for the...
This is just for integer filling, yep. Fractional filling, the problem is much harder, and there are some fractions which are there with even denominator. They are even harder to understand. So the analysis for fractional quantum Hall effect, if you don't use the theory of composite fermions, is going to be very different from this. There will be a notion of incompressibility of ground state that is more relevant for at these fractions. So let's start with the Hamiltonian for graphene. The Hamiltonian can be written as the Fermi velocity Vf, which, so the system is relativistic. This is it's constant, the magnitude of this, and we have sigma dot p, where sigma represents the two sublattices in graphene that you discussed in the first week. This vector sigma is a vector of Pauli matrices. So what this Hamiltonian really is Vf sigma x px plus sigma y py. This is because graphene is a two-dimensional material, and what we are interested in now is to apply perpendicular magnetic field to this. So what we are going to do is choose a gauge. So let's choose Landau gauge. The problem is much simpler in Landau gauge. So in Landau gauge, the vector potential is 0, Bx, 0. So we can think of this Hamiltonian now as Vf sigma dot P plus Ea. And we are going to write this as Vf sigma dot pi. So these pi are operators P plus Ea. So I've chosen a gauge and I wrote down the Hamiltonian. Now, instead of solving it like a differential equation, we'll solve it in another way, just to learn another trick. And what we are going to do is we are going to compute commutator of, say, pi x and pi y. So these are two operators. So this commutator is going to be Px plus EAX PY plus EAY. Now, the vector potential in X is 0, in Y is BX. So what you have is commutator PX, comma PY plus EBX. Now, PX and PY commute, the only non-zero term will come from PX and X. So this commutator is equal to, so what we find is the commutator of pi x, pi y is, now commutator of p and x is minus I h bar. So you have minus I h bar e b. Now this EB can be written in terms of the magnetic length. So EB is H bar over L square. So what I have is this commutator is minus I H bar square divided by L square. So these momentum operators, they satisfy this canonical commutation relation. What that means is we can use these operators to define new raising and lowering operators. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to define new operators, A and A dagger, in the following way. So the operator A is defined as L over H bar divided by square root of 2 pi x minus I pi y. And a dagger is L over h bar square root of 2 So we can check if you use this commutation relation. You'll find that these operators themselves have this commutator. What this means is I can write down the momentum operator now in terms of A and A dagger, and I'll find this is H bar square root of 2L A dagger plus A, and pi y is So next, what we are going to do is write down the Hamiltonian, this Hamiltonian, in terms of these operators. So let's substitute these operators. And what we will find is that the Hamiltonian is VF 0 pi x minus I pi y pi x plus I pi y. This Hamiltonian would be square root of 2 h bar vf over L 0 a dagger 0. So we can check this Hamiltonian is Hermitian. as it must be. Another thing to verify or to see is that the energy eigenvalues are now in units of h bar vf over l. Before, they were given by h bar omega c, that frequency. So the energies now, we can call them, say, h bar omega prime. The energy scale is actually square root of 2. So we have h bar vf. This L itself is square root h bar over eb. So what you have is square root of 2 h bar eb times vf. So we already see that the scale of energy is very different. So our goal is to understand why in graphene we see room temperature quantum Hall effect. So we already see some hints that the scale of energy, the scale of Landau levels is very different from what we had for parabolic dispersion. Another strange thing is that this Hamiltonian looks nothing like the simple harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian, right? Let's try to find out eigenvalues of this Hamiltonian. So let's assume that un vn is an eigenvector. With energy epsilon n. What that means is we have square root 2 h bar e b times vf. Times a. Vn is equal to epsilon n un. Now this is a coupled system of equation. You can replace for un from this equation, and what you will find is that this is equivalent to saying A dagger A on Vn is epsilon n square divided by 2 h bar E P Vf square. Now we know the spectrum of A dagger A. The spectrum of A dagger A is non-negative integers. So we know the eigenvalues of this operator. So now think of this equation as operator times Vn, eigenvalue times Vn. So we can calculate the eigenvalues of this. We can calculate epsilon n. So this implies that epsilon n must be plus minus square root 2 n e b h bar times vf. So this is very different from n plus half h bar omega. In the previous case, we found that all Landau levels are separated by same distance in energy, which was h bar omega c. Now, they are not separated by same distance. So the Landau levels go as square root of 2n. So if I plot, for example, let's make this plot, density of states as a function of energy, what I will find What I will find is, let's choose units of square root 2 e p h bar times vf. So we have a Landau level at zero. This is also something that we did not have when we have when we had parabolic dispersion. So n equal to zero is at zero energy. So there is a Landau level at zero energy. So there's going to be a Landau level here. Then there is a Landau level at n equal to one and n equal to minus one. And the energy values of that is basically two square root two e h h bar b times vf. So we have Landau level at one and minus one. So we have Landau levels here and here. Then the next Landau levels, n equal to two and n equal to minus two, or n equal to 2 plus and minus, are at square root of 2. So this is 1, and then the next one should be here, at square root of 2 and at minus square root of 2. The next one you would see would be at square root of 3 minus square root of 3. So the distance in energy between these Landau levels as n increases also decreases. So this is the spectrum of Landau levels that you would get for graphene. So this is equivalent to this picture over here. Now, why we have holes? Graphene is a bipolar system. What that means is you have both electrons and holes. So remember, this was the dispersion relation for graphene. So this is Dirac point, which is zero energy. So you have many Landau levels. So you start with this dispersion for graphene. And then when you put this in magnetic field, you get Landau levels. Yes.
Can you explain the
whole
thing? What is that?
So in the problem in the tutorial, you did tight binding model for honeycomb lattice. And you got some band structure for it. Right? Like this. This corresponds to some band structure in the first Prillwin zone. Now, in the first Prillwin zone, there are 6 points. So the first Prillwin zone is also a hexagon. Let's draw in now in reciprocal space. I'm drawing this hexagon. The band structure that you calculated showed that you have this Dirac point, or the dispersion looks like this at these edges. Now the symmetry, the C3V symmetry of the lattice implies that there are 6 Dirac points, so there are 6 corners, but only 2 of them are in equivalent. So if this is K, this is also K, this is also K, this is K prime, this is also K prime, this is also K prime. So that means there are 2 inequivalent valleys, which are labeled by K and K prime. And at those valleys, I'm drawing this cone. So this Dirac point, this, think of this dispersion as at this point. So now imagine a 3-dimensional plot. So this is momentum space. And I want to plot the energy, say, going out of this board. So So this top cone is how the close to the direct point, the dispersion goes linearly like this. This top cone is coming on top. And this, the cone below direct point, is for energies below. So this cone is going into the board. Now imagine filling states. So the Fermi energy for graphene, if you don't add anything, any extra electrons to it, don't dope the system, the Fermi energy lies at the direct point. So you'll find all of this cone filled. Now imagine you reduce the number of electrons. So this you can do in graphene by by applying electric field. So what you will do is you will lower down the Fermi energy, and then this lower cone will be the one that will contribute to the transport. So you can also think of this as conduction and valence band. You can think of, in the terminology of semiconductors, you can call this conduction band, this as valence band, this as electrons, this as holes, and there are many terminologies. But what I've drawn here is basically the dispersion relation you calculated from the tight binding model at one of these valleys, K. Equivalently, you'll have another cone at K prime. What that means is you would have identical to this spectrum here. This is in valley K. You'll have another set of these Landau levels at valley K prime. As a result of this zeroth Landau level, what we find is that the value of filling factors, where we see the plateaus, is no longer n, but is n plus half. So remember, in the parabolic dispersion, we did not have any plateau here. Any Landau level at zero. So we should not expect any plateau at zero energy. Now we are going to have localized states here and here. So as we go through localized states, we'll have the zeroth Landau level will also contribute. And what that does is it shifts the filling factors where you see plateau in those conductance and resistance curves, and it shifts them by half. And now we are also going to put factor of 2 for spin. So if I calculate the conductance, the Hall conductance for graphene, there is going to be a factor of 2 for spin, a factor of 2 for valley. This, and then this is conductance, so I'll say E square over H. So doing the same problem for graphene, there are some new features. There is a Landau level at zero energy. The Landau levels are no longer equidistant in energy, and they have additional degeneracy. The spin will be there also for parabolic dispersion, but we have a new degeneracy, the valley degeneracy. Yes?
Do you mind just saying what sigma h is for the other case?
Sorry?
What would that be for the non-carbon case? The
That's a good... So let's write down 2 deg. But keep in mind, it's just the parabolic dispersion. So this will be factor of 2 for spin, and then you will have n e square over h. Typically, you will see the spin will be ignored from the discussion, and you will just ignore spin from the Hamiltonian, calculate Landau levels, and just multiply all the energy states you got by a factor of 2. when you have very large magnetic fields, another thing you can imagine is, say you have very large magnetic field, then the Zeeman splitting between the two spins is going to be very large. And in that case, the energy separation between upspin and downspin is going to be very large, much larger than h bar omega c. And in that case, you can ignore this factor of 2. So the factor of 2 for spin will be there if the spin states or the splitting in Zeeman splitting is very small. If it is very large, then you have a spin polarized system. There is only one spin in the system. And this is a way to realize a system that you did yesterday in the tutorial, like the spinless superconductor. One way to do this is to have a band of electrons that only have one spin. And if they have only one spin and you want to have superconductivity in this band, you must have triplet superconductor because there is no other spin to form singlet Cooper pairs. So now we can calculate this number, 2e v h bar vf divided by kb. So what this number is it's the separation between the zeroth Landau level and the first. So I'm calculating this energy splitting in terms of temperature. And this number comes out to be around 420 Kelvin. So this is larger than room temperature. That's why you can see integer quantum Hall effect in graphene at room temperature. What that means is if the temperature, say, is, or rather, let's look at those Landau levels. If the temperature is larger than h bar omega c, then the fact that you have different Landau levels is not going to matter, or will get washed out by thermal excitations. So you would not see any plateaus. So in that case, the temperature needed to be around few Kelvin. While in graphene, even at room temperature, you can at least see a plateau corresponding to these three Landau levels. The higher ones, you can see the energy separation goes down by a factor of square root of 2 and so on. So if you do, even at 10 Kelvin or 20 Kelvin, even at relatively, which is quite high temperature compared to the quantum Hall effect for conventional cases, you will see well quantized plateaus for graphene. Any questions so far? So another property that of graphene quantum Hall effect is to see fractional quantum Hall effect. Typically, you have to go. So you remember the figure that was distributed. We saw that this was around 10 Tesla or so. To see the fractions, you had to go to very high magnetic fields, like of the order 30 Tesla or so. For graphene, to see fractional quantum Hall effect, it's enough to have magnetic field around 10 Tesla, which again has to do with the scaling with magnetic field. Is square root of B, not linear with B. So the scaling of energy scale is square root of B. not proportional to B. Any questions?
Could you explain again why it was n plus a half correctly?
N plus half?
Yep.
So if we start, if we have, so now there is going to be a plateau for localized states here. Or below, so before, there was no band, or imagine it this way, that you need, because say you do the same picture again, you'll be left with some extended states here. Those extended states will give rise to a vanishing rho xx, right? That means there should be a plateau for zeroth Landau level. And this plateau means that there is an edge state that has to contribute to transport. So the conductance cannot be zero at a plateau. And that conductance is actually, so the reason half is because this edge state is polarized.
Very polarized.
Yeah. So that's why this factor of half is there. So, yeah, indeed. So for this, to see this in detail, we need to figure out the actual structure of the edge states, then you will have to think in graphene, you have different types of edges. So for example, if this is the edge of the sample, this is called armchair edge. You will have edge like this, or you can have this edge, which is zigzag edge. So depending on the chemical nature of the edges, you'll calculate the properties of the edge states. But yeah, so this factor of half comes from the microscopic details of the of graphene. Any other questions? So I would like to end the lecture here. In these 3 weeks, we covered a lot of topics, but it's a core course. There is limited time, so we only were able to cover a few. I hope you're convinced that there are a lot of interesting problems in condensed matter. A lot of these things that we discussed for materials that are standard by now. There are new materials that are being developed in labs. And even these things that were presented here, which are well understood, when we try to do the same experiment for these new materials, we find many surprises. So even though in condensed matter, the particles we are dealing with are electrons, fundamental particles are electrons, we understand all properties of electrons. We understand its charge, mass, spin, all individual properties. But when you put many of these electrons together, they can behave in extremely strange ways. They can give rise to Cooper pairs, they can give rise to composite fermions, you can get very strange behavior. So there can be many interesting emerging properties that emerge just from well understood particles, but they emerge because we have many of them and they behave collectively. And there are new materials, there are exciting new discoveries made in condensed matter. And what we have learned here are tools that you can use to explore some of these unresolved problems. Thank you.